When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Gonna take it. Got it! Boston wins!
Two legends in basketball analysis with over 70 years combined experience. This is the Bob Ryan and Jeff Goodman podcast.
NBA, some college, a little bit of everything.
You know, what can I say? But it wasn't gonna happen here with him. I was okay with it because it wasn't about talent, I didn't think.
All right, let's get right to it.
All right, welcome in another edition of the Ryan and Goodman podcast. I'm Jeff Goodman. He's Bob Ryan. And we have a special guest today. We have none other than new Houston Rockets head coach, Stephen Silas. Stephen, do you know Bob Ryan? Do you remember him? He tells a story. You should remember him back from when you were 5 years old, Stephen. Do you?
Of course I remember Bob Ryan. That's like family in the Silas household. There's like my grandparents and my uncles and aunts, and then there's Bob Ryan.
Did he dunk on you in this Nerf basketball game when you were five? I want to know if he dunked on you and celebrated. We need video of this.
That was before all that dunking and celebrating stuff. There were more layups and just run back down court. We didn't do all that stuff.
I got to tell the world that I go back farther with this new coach of the Rockets than anybody else in the business, because he can't remember this specifically, but I can tell him that you're the first NBA coach with whom I played Nerf basketball on my knees in your living room.
How about that?
In Seattle. This is when your dad had, the first year he was with the Sonics. And I was out and I was over visiting, and we wound up, you and me, going one-on-one on Nerf basketball.
That's awesome. Yeah, I don't remember that. Those are the days, though. Stuff like that doesn't happen anymore.
I know that. Well, I'll tell you, your background with the dad, of course, dad's one of my all-time favorite people. But we'll get to that in a little while. But what's it been like since you were named coach? I mean, is it just a whirlwind? What's been happening?
It's very much a whirlwind. There's the putting together a staff part. There's connecting with the players part, whether it's via text and then following up with phone calls. There's coordinating with the management and the ownership on the vision of what we're going to be doing forward. There's all sorts of plays and coverages and stuff on my boards, just trying to get organized in my head. There's practice plans to be done, and the clock is ticking on whenever training camp is going to start. So there's a lot going on, and it's so exciting. I have a great opportunity here and a really good group of people to work with. So it's been definitely a lot. My wife is dealing with, you know, housing and schools for the girls, but it's all good stuff. I'm not complaining one bit.
So, I mean, in the basketball world, there's the big conversation has been about the starting date. And for some teams, of course, it'll be 10 months since they played. Other teams, it'll seem like the season ended yesterday. And you guys certainly went deep. And therefore, has there been much of that discussion in your organization, or are you just saying, well, there's the date, we're going to live with it, and that's that?
Yeah, a little bit of both, I would say. You know, this team did go to the second round and didn't have the long layoff if the calendar kind of stays where it is. So being attentive to that, but also making sure that they're physically going to be able to endure the grind and making sure that we schedule training camp and put it in a format to where they're not really having to grind all that much. As much as I want to do as far as putting in my stuff and putting my stamp on this team, it really is going to be dependent on their ability to physically handle it and looking long-term and big picture instead of just like the first 3 days of practice.
So for people that look at you, they'll be shocked by the fact that you've been in this for 20 years as an assistant. You look like you're like 31 years old. You're not. You're closer to my age than 31, and I'm 49. What's it been like, though, the grind, Stephen, of 20 years now? A lot of it was working for your dad. So I'm sure you didn't think of it as probably as much of a grind. But what was it like to get that call after, at 47, getting a head coaching opportunity?
It was amazing. You know, you go through these job interviews and the head coach position interviews, and you're not really sure if you have a chance or not. And this year was different because, you know, some of the other interviews that I had were Zoom interviews. So it's hard to connect via Zoom, and it's hard to get the eye contact and the social cues that you would usually get in a face-to-face meeting. This interview process in Houston was great because it was face-to-face, and I flew down to Houston and was able to meet the people, and a lot easier to relate in that way. But to actually get the job after years and years of interviews and good seasons.
How many had you been up for? How many, do you remember how many jobs, how many interviews you've gone on? Have you lost count? Is it that many?
Yeah, no, it's probably like 9 or 10, yeah. 9 or 10 interviews, including two here. I interviewed here when they hired Mike D'Antoni. So that was actually an advantage coming in for this interview because I knew a lot of the people, yeah, and how they wanted to play and all that. So I definitely had a leg up this time, but you know, the years just kind of go by. And the thing about coaching that is so great, especially as an assistant coach, it's very much relationship based, and you kind of get lost in helping players get better and helping your head coach and not necessarily thinking about the big picture as far as how long I've been doing it and that sort of thing. So just diving into the players, I guess, kind of kept me sane as I went through the whole process. But I do remember my dad kind of going through the same thing. And he was obviously the head coach with the Clippers when they were in San Diego, and then waited, you know, umpteen years until he had his chance in Charlotte. So I remember him going through the same interview process and us getting excited because maybe this is the one, and he wouldn't get it. And same thing for him. He would just dive into his players and dive into his preparation and really use the time that he had with the coaches that he coached with. I mean, he coached with Chuck Daly and Pat Riley and some really good coaches. So that's what I've tried to model myself after. It's great that I have a dad like I have that's had so many experiences. So kind of getting through it hasn't been the grind that it seemed like it would have been.
I remember at one point, one of the jobs he would have liked to have had when it was up was Boston.
Yeah,
I remember that very well. I remember talking to him during that process.
Yeah,
you know, the line he used to use in those days about, you know, why he should be the coach, and I could tell him what time the bus leaves as well as anybody.
That's
yeah, he used to frame the head coach job in terms of, you're the guy who tells what time the bus leaves.
That's my dad. That's it. I believe it.
I got to tell a story right now because I don't want to forget it about Paul Silas.
Okay.
And why, just exhibit A, and why he's one of my all-time favorite guys to cover. And one night in about circa 74, we're in Buffalo, and that was a terrific rivalry at the time. They were loaded with Bob McAdoo, Dernie D, Randy Smith, et cetera, Jim McMillan.
Yeah.
And it was a good rivalry, and it had come out of a tough playoff series, a six-game series. And we're there early in the season, and they got a big crowd, and he says to me before the game, how many are out there? And I said, well, it's going to be 18,000. They say it's going to be the biggest crowd in the history of Western New York. He used to frame it that way in Buffalo. He said, good, we're going to send them all home unhappy. Which, of course, they did.
Which, of course, he did.
But that was classic Paul Silas. I just had to
comment. Yeah, for sure. That's him in a nutshell. And the way he sent them home with physicality and I'm sure a little altercation here or there was his style.
No kidding.
How are you similar, Stephen? How are you similar and how are you different than your dad? Give me like the one thing that you're the most similar, whether it's personality, coaching style or whatever, and then the one thing that you are completely different than your dad.
That's a really good question. I would say our similarities are we have a quiet toughness about us, but we're easy to smile. My dad is, if you know him, you know that he is quick to smile and just like the most genuine person. But from the outside looking in, he may not necessarily seem that way just because he's kind of gruff and whatnot. And I can seem that way as well. Sometimes I can seem a little quiet, reserved, serious and that, but you get to know me and I'm quick to smile, quick to laugh, quick to enjoy myself. So we're similar in that vein. And we have a lot of the same qualities as far as our personalities, for sure. Our difference is our stature, 100%. And he uses his stature to his advantage, very much so. But, you know, he's big and burly and strong, and I'm long and skinny and not nearly as imposing as my dad. So I would say those are the two things that stick out.
Among your experiences in the coaching world are international. You've had experience in Africa, Asia, Germany, and so forth. How does that play into the coach you've become and what you can accomplish the international experience?
It really helped me kind of separate myself from my dad. I was very intentional at the beginning as far as I knew that he gave me the opportunity to be a scout and then kind of work my way up to the coaching part. But I also knew that I was going to be Paul Silas's son for a long time. And I knew I was going to have to meet new people, have new experiences. And the NBA does a great job of allowing assistant coaches to do basketball without borders or camps overseas or, you know, all sorts of clinics. So I used every summer, I wanted to do something separate from my dad where I could grow as a coach and get to meet some people and kind of hone my own craft, because that's, at the beginning of my career, that's all I knew until I went to work for Don Nelson, which is a whole nother story. But I was definitely very intentional as far as doing all those overseas camps. And the other part of going overseas is they really don't have the resources as far as coaching and facilities and all of that. So to go and to be able to coach the coaches and to coach the kids and have them have a memorable experience was also something I really enjoyed.
Now, I know you went as part of Basketball Without Borders to Africa. Yeah. I got to ask you, as a Black man, how that experience moved you.
So much of it is just amazing to see Black people everywhere in every position. And they went through apartheid and there's a lot there kind of under the surface, but to see how proud they were after all of that went down and how proud they were to have us there and how friendly they were. But we also went to, you know, a town called Soweto, where there's homes like shacks basically made of metal sheets and no running water, and the joy that those people had, and they were dancing and playing music and little kids just running up to you, just wanting to hold your hand as they walk through the town. It's just like a life-changing experience, especially as a, like you said, a Black man from America. You really don't get a feel for that, that part of it in Africa. So that was an eye-opening experience, definitely educational experience, and one that I'll remember forever.
So I won't claim to know Harden and Westbrook well, but I've been around them since they were back in AU ball. Okay, so that's the one claim to fame I have. I've covered them AU, college, and in the NBA. They're unique personalities. That's how I'll describe them. They're very different but unique, and obviously we know most of these NBA stars have egos, other than I think Steph Curry. who you know, hasn't changed one bit. Like the one dude I can say has not changed one bit since I first met him when he was at Davidson. How well do you know these guys, and how do you deal with them? How do you get to know them better quickly? Because that's half the battle, isn't it? As the head coach, is making sure those guys trust you and you have that type of relationship where they're going to play hard for you and respect you.
Yeah, it's a fine line. So to answer your first question, how well do I know them? Not super well. They were part of the interview process and they signed off on me for the ownership and Rafael Stone, our GM, to hire me. So that helps, you know, coming into a situation where they know, where I, at least I know that they wanted me to be here. But the main thing for me and those guys is to let it happen organically. Obviously, I want it to happen as soon as possible and sooner than later. But trust needs to happen organically to me for it to be long lasting and for it to be true. I don't want to try to force myself and let these guys know how much I know or who I know or what our connections are and all that stuff. It really just has to be a day by day, practice by practice, game by game basis where they understand, one, that I can help them play better and play as well as they can possibly play and play their game. Two, I can help the team play well and play deep into the playoffs and that sort of thing. But it just has to be a genuine relationship that can't be forced or pushed and, you know, it's going to take time. And I get that. And I think that's like you were talking about me not being so young. I'm 47. I think if I were in my 30s, I wouldn't necessarily understand that process as far as, you know, letting it happen organically and it'll come because I know what I'm doing. I'm smart. I'm experienced. And I have a good vision for this group.
I think anyone who follows basketball, whether from the media through the fans, have one question about the 2020-21 Rockets is how are they going to play? The two architects of a certain style are gone. Yeah. Daryl Morey and Mike D'Antoni are gone. And now you are the new coach of a team that everyone has a certain image of as the way they have played the game in an extreme manner.
Bob, tell them how much you love how the Rockets play the game, Bob.
This team has had an unusually strong commitment to the three-point shot, okay? I'll let it go with that.
Bob hates the three, Steven. Bob hates the three.
All right, but I'm trying to put that aside. I'm being careful about the three. I know it's here to stay. But seriously, Steven, is it going to continue? I mean, how's this team going to play?
It's going to be similar just because there's a couple of reasons it'll be similar. If you look what we did in Dallas, and I was offensive coordinator in Dallas, a lot of what we did was based on Luka having the basketball, Porzingis as a screener, roller, popper, and then we had a bunch of three-point shooters on the perimeter, really just trying to take advantage of the space on the floor and getting the ball into the paint, and whether we finish at the rim or finish with a three-point shot, the analytics go along with that. And, you know, that's kind of the way that I've kind of grown to think about offense. You think about when I coached with Don Nelson 15 years ago, he was playing small and we were shooting a bunch of threes and people were like, oh my God, it's crazy. We were probably shooting 20 threes a game and now it's 50. But I'm comfortable in a bunch of different ways. I've worked with Nelly where we played small ball and we did a little bit in Dallas. But then when I was in Charlotte, we had Al Jefferson down in the post. And you know, you really have to just play to your team's strengths and the makeup of your roster. We're trying to have a roster that can play in multiple ways and have a traditional center out there where we can roll and play a little bit more of a physical brand of basketball, because that's obviously what I grew up on and I've tinkered with it a little bit. But small ball is definitely going to be a part of what we do because they've had success. They were sixth in offense last year. And for me to say no more small ball wouldn't be prudent, especially with the short window that we have coming going forward. So to answer your question, it'll look a little bit similar. Hopefully there'll be a little bit more ball movement, a little bit more player movement, a little bit more focus on the paint to create threes as opposed to just coming down and shooting threes. But, you know, that's kind of how I see it. I'm with the analytics. I'm with how the game is played today, but I'm also with the spirit of the team and the spirit of a player as far as his ability to know that he can just play his game and he doesn't have to really think outwardly about the analytics part. He needs to be free to play his best.
NFL football continues on this week, which has a few surprise teams at the top of the standings. You might not be at a game this year, but you could still be in on the action at Bet Online. No matter how schedules change or players that play, Bet Online is going the extra mile to make sure that you can get in on every game this season with the fastest updated odds in the industry. There are always more options to wager than anywhere else on Bet Online. Head to Bet Online today and take advantage of all the great midseason bonuses, offers, and contests. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts.
As an opposing coach, what was it like to confront James Harden? And are you, you know, I mean, what, yeah, just tell me, what's it like to see him out there doing what he does, knowing you can't stop it? He wants to step back from 35. He's stepping back from 35, right?
it's so hard. Preparing for this team has been a nightmare for multiple reasons. I mean, so James can really do it all. He can score on every level. He handles the ball. He makes good plays with the ball, and you get the ball out of his hands, and now you're dealing with 4-on-3 and open three-point shooters, and it's very much pick your poison. And then the small ball aspect of it, where you're having, if you have a traditional center trying to guard this small ball lineup, where is he going to be on the floor? Is he going to be down the floor and now you're giving up threes? Is he going to be up and now he's giving up penetration? So the James Harden part of it is a nightmare to prepare for. And based on the fact that he averaged 35 a game last year, there aren't too many people who have figured it out. So I'm not going to mess with it. But but this preparing for this team has been kind of hard. But then as you get to the playoffs, if you're kind of playing the same way the whole time, it becomes easier game by game by game, whether you're playing against the switching defense or the small ball offense. So like I said, the versatility is going to be important for me going forward, just so we have more tools to go to, especially as the playoffs approach.
So how quickly and what was the moment you realized Luka was off the charts special?
It wasn't immediate, like looking at him walking into a gym. It's like, man, that guy is big to be 19 years old, you know, but he wasn't especially fast or anything like that. But I would say probably the first time I saw him compete in a pickup game where he was making plays for other people, the people that he's picked on his team, he would always make sure that he had the right group of players to play with. They weren't necessarily the best players, but they were ones that fit with him. And that's those guys, like you were talking about Steph and Coach LeBron and Luka and Kemba. Like, they're just mentally, they really have an edge, and that's what makes them great. So once I saw all that and his ability to make other people better and the size, and he's deceptively fast. And I mean, he's really, really special. He's a problem. Like, we're talking about James Harden as a problem. Luka's a problem as well.
I want to back up a little bit now biographically. We know you were a graduate of Brown University, but where'd you go to high school? I don't know.
So I went to John Jay High School in Westchester, New York. But Then after that, I did a postgraduate year at St. Thomas More.
Jerry Quinn?
Yeah, I played for JQ.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So I played for Jerry Quinn in 92. We had Steve Frazier was our point guard. He went to Miami.
Sure.
And Charles Minland, who went to St. John's, he went to St. John's. So we were really good. We were a really, really good team. We had six Division I guys on the team. And Jerry Quinn is obviously a legendary coach in that small gym in Oakdale, Connecticut. But yeah, that's where I went to high school.
Okay. Now we know you have the NBA bloodlines with Dad Paul, but when you were making those bus rides to Cornell, the Ithaca, New York, and the Hanover, New Hampshire, or even up to Harvard, was the NBA coaching? It was coaching. What were you thinking about then for a career?
I was thinking about passing these hard classes that I'm in right now. That was my focus.
Why did I go to Brown?
I have to figure out a way to graduate from Brown University. So as we were going on those long bus trips, like, okay, I got to make sure that my schoolwork is done so I can figure out how I'm going to graduate. But once I graduated, I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I knew I loved basketball. I had a great education. And it's funny, Coach Correll, Pete Correll, would always be like, why do you want to get into basketball? You have a Brown degree, you know, do something where you can make some money. Like, you can go anywhere and be a basketball coach. But I had the opportunity to scout. After my first 3 years, I worked for the Retired Players Association. Actually, a Brown grad, Dennis Coleman, was the executive director of the Retired Players Association. So I worked for him for 3 years. And my dad brought me on as a scout. And once I got into the scouting part of it and traveling all over the place and the X's and O's and then working with players, I just loved it. So I didn't really know what I wanted to do when I was at Brown, but I knew I loved basketball. And as long as I could get that piece of paper from Brown, I could do something.
How eye-opening was that job with the Retired Players Association, the kind of things that you heard about, the stories that I guess that you learned? There must have been, for a young man, that must have been, wow, right? Some of the stuff, I would think.
Yeah, it was definitely eye-opening, especially, I mean, I knew most of the names and a lot of the guys I knew already. You know, we had on our board of directors, Dave DeBuscher, Oscar Robertson, Dave Bing, Dave Cowens, guys like that. So I knew them and knew a lot about them. But the stories of the guys, and at that time, we were really trying to work on benefits and pension benefits and making sure that the injuries that they had were taken care of. And the money part of it was such a big part, because those guys didn't make much money at all back then. And there really wasn't a mechanism within the Players Association and the CBA to make sure that they were getting taken care of, even though they were laid the foundation for what was going on. So it was definitely eye-opening. And some of the letters that I received and some of the requests that I got, we had a scholarship fund and we got a bunch of requests for the scholarships for the kids of those retired players who were kind of struggling and going through it. So It was a gratifying experience, because we were able to help quite a few retired players, but it was kind of the groundwork for what they've done now. And now they've gotten to where they have health insurance and there's a lot more benefits to being a retired player than there were when I first started with them.
How concerned, Stephen, are you going into this season about injuries? Again, this team only went into the second round, but it's still the second round. You're still not dealing with the same amount of time. Obviously, LeBron, we know they're going to load manage plenty with LeBron and even AD, who's young. How much have you thought about that and even talked to James and Russ about, hey, what do we got to do for you guys early?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I've spoken to a lot of people, our performance team, first and foremost, making sure that we're all on the same page when it comes to how much we're going to do and whatnot. And then the players, I've talked to all the players and let them know that I'm going to be smart about our ramp up, because it's kind of like when we went to the bubble and there was a short period of time and we had to really be smart about how we ramped up so the guys wouldn't deal with injuries and lingering injuries and that sort of thing. So yeah, it's definitely something that we talk about a lot, and it's something that I am very cognizant of. But with a 72-game season, there's 10 less games to kind of mess around with. So you have to make sure you're right and you're ready, but you can't be injured as well. So it's kind of like a fine line that we're walking, and there are a lot of conversations around that.
Just kind of feeling them out almost game to game, you think, Stephen, as much as anything, and talking them throughout the early part of the season? Do you need the day? Because, I mean, some guys might already have it in their heads, right? No back-to-backs early, something like that. I would assume for you it's going to be a feeling-out process, isn't it?
Yeah, it's going to be a feeling-out process. A lot of the good thing about us is a lot of the guys have been playing and been working out, and John Lucas, who's here, has done a great job kind of keeping guys engaged with their game and their conditioning. So we do have a little bit of a leg up on that, but it's still going to be, like you said, a work in progress and a lot of communication back and forth between the players, myself, and the performance team.
Now is the point at our podcast where we play embarrass the guest.
Oh, Lord. Okay. We've already talked about
that. I've done my homework.
Okay. Okay.
And I am told that when you were a little toddler, I'm talking 2-3, that they would allow you to sit in front of the TV, watch the games. Yep. Dad was playing in Seattle, and that your first words were neither mama nor dada, but your first words, ready for this, Jeff?
What you're about to say.
JoJo White.
What? Come on. No way. That was your first words? JoJo White?
That's what I was told. My first words.
When he was in Boston. I misspoke. This is when he was in Boston. This is before we played the Nerf ball game.
His first words
were JoJo White. I have that on very good authority.
And, I don't know where you got that from, but from what I've been told, that is the truth. My first words were JoJo White.
All right, we'll cut out of the embarrass the guest portion. Someone I want to ask you about. You were on the ground floor of LeBron's NBA career.
Yeah.
Is there anything about what he's become that surprises you, or could you see it all unfolding right then and there?
No, I didn't see it unfolding right then and there. I knew he was going to be really, really, really good. But I don't think you could ever say that somebody's going to be 1, 2, 3, 4 best player in the history of the game. You know, he was super smart. When he first came in, one of the best things he did was pass the ball, and that's continued. And he was bigger, stronger, faster at 19 years old, but he's even bigger now. He's even stronger now. He's even faster now. And his basketball IQ, I don't think you could ever have anticipated that it would be like genius. I mean, we'd have thought it would be really, really good, but almost savant-like. Mm. That's hard to anticipate that's going to happen. So I knew he would be amazing, all-star, you know, Hall of Fame potential and that sort of thing. But to know that he would go to all the finals that he's gone to and just take teams and put them on his back and that sort of thing. I would be lying if I said, for sure, I knew that.
To your knowledge, was there any veteran on that team who socially, I mean, you know, took him under his wing or that he looked up to for any kind of guidance on anything, but it's basketball or whatever?
You know, he used to really respect Zydrunas Ilgauskas.
Big Z.
Yeah, Big Z. And we had a really young team. So I coached Summer League, and LeBron was on my team, and we had DeJuan Wagner. We had Darius Miles, Carlos Boozer, and Sagana Jop. That was my starting five of my
Sagana Jop.
Yeah. That was my starting five of my Summer League team. And unfortunately, that was basically the lineup that we had during the regular season as well. So we didn't really win very, very many games. But the point is that we were a very young team, and we didn't really have vets around quite as much. But Z was the one who was there and had been established and had been an all-star and really had a good way about him. And LeBron definitely leaned on Z for his experience.
You're gonna get your parents out there for your first game? Is that
hope so? You know, with the COVID and everything and the travel and whatnot, I hope they're able to make it out here for the first game. But I want them to be safe first and foremost, and they'll be able to watch on TV if not. But I'm praying that come December 22nd, they'll be in the building.
I want to talk about your dad for a minute. So just for how much you were pretty much too young. I've really ever seen him play to register that you can verify it. How much have you seen visual evidence subsequently so you could get a real feel for what he was really truly like on the floor?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I mean, any game that he's playing that's on NBA TV.
Classic
or whatever. I watched and I still do watch and text him, tell him the game is on and, hey, you got in a fight in this game with so-and-so. And he won't remember that he got in a fight with whoever because he got in so many altercations during his career and didn't even get a technical, you know, nothing happened. It'd just be like foul play on, but you know, the triple overtime game is one that's on all the time. And
every year
him calling the timeout that Richie Powers decided.
That's right.
You know, the championship teams in Boston as well as Seattle. I'm very well versed on my dad's history, and the great thing about being in this industry for so long and being around so many people is there isn't a day that goes by that somebody doesn't mention him, have a story about him, or just ask how he's doing or that kind of thing. So I'm lucky to have the person who my dad was along with the coach and the player and all that stuff. But it's really, really cool because people have so much respect for him. And some of it rubs off on me and I'm appreciative of that.
I really believe he's a neglected Hall of Famer. What he did, the way he played the game, his style, nobody was better at it. As a matter of fact, he retired with more rebounds than points.
Yeah.
And I don't think I didn't done my homework. I'm going to do it. I don't think there's any Hall of Famer can make that statement. And we're not talking about 4 points and four rebounds either. We're talking about a career 11 rebounds a game guy. And it's just tremendous. And it's all first team, all defense. But you know what I called him on those teams? And by the way, his 4 years in Boston, you should have this memory, you know, commitment so you can drop this on people. His 4 years in Boston, the teams just happen to have a record of 238-90. Okay? And included the 68-win team and two rings. And frankly, they should have won in 75 too, but that's another story. There were things, and they did win in 76. And they would have won in 73 if Havlicek hadn't gotten hurt against the Knicks.
Shoulder, right?
So he came really close to winning four rings. Yeah. Just a 16-year career, and the Sonics don't win in 79 without him. There's no way. So and they went to the finals in 78 as well. So I don't ever, you know, want him to be forgotten at all. And not that he is, but you know what I'm saying. I want him sufficiently appreciated is what I'm trying to spit out.
Definitely. You know? He's contributed so much to the game. I mean, the 16 years that he played, and I think he only missed the playoffs maybe just 1 year out of the 16 years. And I mean, the players that he's played with, and then the coaching part of it, like you can't really tell the story of the NBA without having
a paragraph
about my dad. So hopefully at some point the Hall of Fame will come calling, and that would be an amazing thing for him. I know he's like, oh, you know, whatever, but he deserves it to me. He really does.
Yeah, well, you're right.
Have you ever asked him who the toughest guy is, either one of you, that he ever went up against?
Yeah, yeah. Him and Wes Unseld used to go at it.
Like, yeah.
And he used to say how strong Wes was. And he used to guard him. And the funny thing is that they were friends off the floor. Like during the summer, they would go on the Players Association trips and that kind of stuff. And then beat the heck out of each other during the regular season and the playoffs. And Wes Jr. and I are really close friends, and he's going to be a head coach soon as well. So we're super close to the Unseld family, although his dad and my dad used to just beat the crap out of each other.
Steve Kaberski played for the Celtics, and he had a line about Wes Unseld that was great. He said, he sets a pick and it takes you 24 seconds to run around it.
That's right. It's sad we lost him.
That's a good pick. I'll tell you though, when the Celtics made that deal to get Paul, it was a direct result of Dave DeBuscher being with the Knicks. He was the Knicks, the DeBuscher antidote, and it worked out exactly as they planned it. It worked out, but he, that was a, That was his matchup with the Knicks when DeBuscher was the standard of power forward.
Him and Dave DeBuscher, because when I worked for Retired Players Association, I used to be with Dave all the time, and their stories would be epic about the elbows and the grabbing and holding and whatnot. And my dad tried to, because he was fast, like he was a burly type player, but he was fast as well. So
he could get up and down the floor. You know, he had that because he dropped that. He had that weight loss that transformed him. And that's the thing that tells so much about him. He did that because he knew he was good, but he wanted to be great. Exactly. And he knew he wasn't going to be great if he didn't lose that weight, and he did. And then he became just an awesome player. And you're right, he was master of getting the ball off the board, pitching it out, and then going filling the wing, scoring at the other end.
Yeah.
Did you ever talk about the la-la? I used to call it the backhand layup. He called it the la-la. I used to kill him about that. I got Paul Silas stories for now and forever. He's great. Awesome. And he had plenty of stories about those old days with the St. Louis Hawks. Oh, and they truly had a no layups. And you know what that means? No layups.
Dude, for sure.
And they meant it.
For sure.
Did you know what you got yourself into coming onto this podcast, Steve?
Oh, this is amazing. This is like
his memory. This guy's memory is like better than any human being I've ever been around. Bob Ryan is like a walking encyclopedia of no matter what it is, like game six, this playoffs, 5 minutes. Like, it's ridiculous. I can't remember what I had for lunch today.
For sure. I'm the same way, but this is awesome because the more stories I hear about my dad, the better. I love it.
All right. We're going to finish on a lighter note, Bob. Can we finish with the fact that Steven, Bob Ryan 2 weeks ago, did not know what a Twix was. How about that? Never heard of it. Had never heard of it.
Really?
That's the other thing I found out. Your favorite candy growing up, I'm told.
I forget who. Somebody just asked me that a couple of days ago. I don't even know who it was. Maybe it was my sister or my wife or somebody. But yeah, Twix. Twix. You got the.
There we go. So I got that in your honor.
And cream
Thank you.
That looks good.
You got to get the one with the caramel. That's the good
one. Right. The original. Yeah. You got to go original.
Okay.
Cookies and cream Twix. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't really know about that.
I think you got to go old school Twix, Bob.
No, okay. No. I'll go next time old school. But there you go.
Listen, you went from an anonymous assistant to a head coach. So now you're gonna get asked all this dumb stuff, like all these things that you can't even remember. Like, you know, again, what's your favorite candy bar? Like, come on. Nobody asks you that when you're an assistant for 20 years.
That's the truth. But the JoJo White one, like that staggered me a little bit. I wasn't expecting that one.
That's high level.
Did my research.
That is.
Well, listen, we really appreciate you coming on. Good luck with everything. Obviously, we know this guy's rooting for you as much as anybody. You got another guy rooting for you now, too.
Yep. I appreciate it.
We'll get out. Hopefully, when I get out and get to Houston at some point, whether it's this year or next year, we'll connect in person, and maybe we can get Bob Ryan to take a trip out there, too.
We can have a rematch of that Nerf ball game, too.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Got to take it easy on him now. Hey, Steve, he's a little bit older now. Now you got him, okay? Don't dunk on him.
Got him.
All right, listen.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been great. This has been so much fun.
Likewise. Thanks for doing this. We really appreciate it. And all the best, all right?
Thank you so much.